Somebody called and said my definition of... Now, I got to matriculate here. That wonderful word that... You know, the Bible can call that relative to a donkey an ass. And it's proper. King James is proper. I mean, Balaam's ass talked. And that was a miracle. Now, I suppose you could refer to that animal's burial place. But somebody would take it wrong. You dig a grave for that animal and you say, that's the ass burial place. Or that animal's hole. Now, there is no better word in the English language than that word to describe a sinner and a deserving icon of that word. It's a wonderful word. And somebody called and said, the definition you gave for that in your message today ought to be in Webster's Dictionary. But I wonder, to those that were in the service today, I wonder if you have caught the possible connection and the temptation that came over me when I properly interpreted the two goats in Leviticus 16 and they cast lots over them. And one lot to Yahweh, Jehovah, and the other lot to Azazel. Now, surely you know that that didn't pass me without me recognizing how close that was to a pun for the burial ground of that animal that I described. And how bad I wanted to say, here comes another load, Azazel. You remember? I should get some real plaudits and some rewards and nice comments on the phone from you that were there for avoiding the temptation of the linguistics that was available in that analogy. And how terrible to you that we're in the service today, and you'll hear the message. I mean, that ought to tell you, you should listen it for no other reason than to hear the definition of what all of you have wanted to call someone at some time or other. And I just gave a definition of it while walking the tightrope of being on public TV. So you need to listen for that. But you need to know where the idea that the lots that were cast on that great day of atonement in Leviticus 16 of the two goats and one lot, one goat, his lot, to Jehovah. The other goat, the lot didn't fall on the goat. After the Old Testament was translated from Hebrew to Greek between 300 and 100 B.C., the Septuagint, the Bible of the New Testament, there were other attempts, Theodosius, Symmachus, Aquila, to offer either better translations or slavishly straight literal translations or translations that were an attempt to counteract the Christian use of the Septuagint. And it was Symmachus and Aquila who came up with the idea that the lot was cast between Jehovah, the person who got one goat, and the goat itself being the scapegoat. And that was picked up by the Vulgate, and in turn picked up by Luther, who was the basis then of the English term scapegoat, until many Christians grow up thinking what really happened was a lot fell on one goat and it gets taken to Jehovah for Jehovah to do what he did to slaughter it and pour out the blood for the sins of the people. And the other lot just made the goat a scapegoat. The lot didn't even fall on the responsible man who would take the scapegoat, the literal Hebrew, to Azazel, a demon prince like the prince of Persia that the angel that came to Daniel would talk about. The prince of the demons that inhabited the desert area around God's people, waiting to pounce on them if they could. Take this other goat with the load of sins on him to Azazel. And that's so close to that AH factor. I could have done a lot with that at the close of the message, but didn't exercise restraint. But I'm sure some of you know what I wanted to say. I mean, it could have said, eat dung, Satan. Eat excrement, Satan. Eat scabala, Satan. Eat caca, Satan. Eat stool, Satan. But none of it really says what I wanted to say. Eat bleep, Satan. Shove it in his face. And then when I went out of the parking lot, to every one of my security people that I could see, I stuck my head out and said, tell Satan, eat bleep. I got it out of my system driving out of the cathedral when the cameras were not on me. You need to listen come 9:04 to today's service to know what I'm talking about. Right now we're live, and I want to talk to you a little bit about Secret 16. The year is finished. I've been here 29 years. I may tell you all of Secret 16 before the next couple of months go by. But we never raise money for projects, ever. You're either going to give money because you recognize all that you are and have is the Lord's, and He's kind enough to only ask for His tithe. Or you're going to give, as Galatians 6, as an expression of value for the teaching, the word that is brought to you. And I say, and I'm the only one I know of in a religious stratosphere that looks in the camera and says, don't send any money until I first teach you. Then, what you think it's worth? We don't raise money for projects. But as the pastor, I have things come in my heart, and I decide what I'm going to do if God bless us. The checks are made out to Dr. Gene Scott. I'm the teacher. I decide for this year, I feel God would have me do this. I don't tell you what the secret is. I estimate about what it'll take, but I make the commitment in my spirit. I haven't told anybody what it is, the secret, and I'm going to do it, whether you send the money or not. The secret becomes an opportunity for you to participate. Now, Secret 16 flowed out of a decision that in the 29 years that I've been here, we have never really brought things up to snuff. When I first came, they had old cameras that the engineers told me, as the church was teetering on bankruptcy. These cameras got a 7-year life, and they only got 4 years. So we got to buy new cameras to be ready at least within 3 years. Well, up until a year ago, we were still using those cameras, 28 years. I came to save a church that was on the brink of bankruptcy. It's far from that now. Didn't even need you to participate in Secret 16 to do what we were going to do. You need to give for God's reasons. But as a pastor, I decided this is the year we're going to do what most churches would raise money to do. You have this need, and you get people to help you, and you put names on the wall. Look around at what's been done in this studio. Look at these cameras. Look at the ceiling. Look at all new sound system, 150,000 plus. I haven't got the figures in front of me. A couple of hundred thousand in video equipment as we brought the cameras up to date. Do you realize that winter has been a nightmare for years as we have scurried around with volunteers putting plastic on roofs? Secret one, that sacred place that turned the corner for this mystery, this ministry, never a new roof on it with all the sacred treasures there. We put new roofs on just about every. We still got a couple of buildings that we're finishing on. New roof here. New roof on King's House 1. Now, you may think those are $10,000 and $15,000 projects. And try $100,000 at Secret 1. Try $40,000 and $60,000 and $80,000 bids on different buildings. New roof here. New roof King's House 1. New roofs on the houses at every place that we own. New roof on the cathedral. That's not a small roof, friends. New roof on the tower. Finishing the retrofit in the elevators of the tower and things I don't want to tell you that we're doing in the tower. Remember, it took us 2 years to get the cathedral portion ready. Remember that? New sound system upstairs, new soundboard. Have you noticed the difference between the mobile truck down at the cathedral and that dilapidated look that it had? You realize that's the truck that Bob Hope used to take overseas for his special events? It's had to be remade. Some of its stuff was older than the stuff that was here. In one of the services, I will, or several of the services, I will have in front of me details, and we'll be able to catalog the total expenditure well into the totals we were striving for with Secret 16. New things done at the foreign locations. This has been the year in which I've said we are going to, having taken the mountain of the cathedral as Secret 15. This is, or was, the year, I said it at the start of the year, we will, like an automobile that needs maintenance and upkeep, this is the year we're going to take all of the properties and all of the increments that are necessary for this worldwide ministry, as we've expanded now, as you well know, to the KU band uplink and news truck and other increments that are necessary to give us backup in the event of an emergency. This is the year we're going to refit this entire ministry for the decades ahead. And there is probably no secret you participated in where every hour, 24 hours a day, and things that I'm sure some of you walked in the hall here at the studio this week, there are things that you have not seen that you will see. The remake inside that you have not seen at King's One, as we have trimmed and fixed and brought to maximum utility and quality for the years ahead, which means every time, every minute, every hour, every day, 365 days out of the year, you that participated in Secret 16, know that only God can sort out and give you the credit for what we've done to make this ministry capable of sustaining in the years ahead, and pitched and covered, to borrow from a phrase this morning that's the root of Kippur, or Kaparit, made it secure for the years ahead. I mean, we have run on a wing and a prayer in many parts of this ministry for years. Everything over on Laurel Street, the old bookstore, things that will take you all year and maybe several years to be exposed to and see. Now, in the Sunday morning service, because not everybody's listening now, I will be spelling out some of these details. Don't have to tell you anything. You gave because you trusted your pastor that I was going to do something this year that would contribute to this ministry and strengthen it. And we've done that. Now, what Secret 17 will be, I haven't yet decided when or where I will launch it. But I want to thank all of you that have participated. And all you have to do is put your cameras in this room here to see. This is just a small sample type of what we've done throughout the ministry, everywhere, north, south, and around. This never looked like a studio before. You know that? And I want to thank publicly my wife, who has administered all of it, on top of all the other things she does, and kept me free to study so I can do what I do on Sunday morning. Now, we're into another year. I was supposed to be dead 3 years ago, you know that? But God shipped off that load to Azazel. And we are just getting started as a ministry. You folks who listen on Channel 56, I'd like to hear from you, your appreciation for the nightly, every day except Saturday from 10 to 11, and then on Sunday from 7 to 11, but likewise the rest of the world. Turn a camera over there on that map, will you? Somebody, and pick up... Oh, no, not that one, the other one. I want you to pick up... That's the map. Stay with it. Go back to it. Whatever map you were on is the one I want. That's it. Those are the shortwave listeners around the world. And you can obviously pick up the sections of Africa that are heavily English-speaking, because we broadcast in English around the world. Everybody wants to learn English. And 24 hours a day, the shortwave covers the world. Satellite, we haven't updated the maps with the Sunday morning satellite program that leaps on a chain of satellites starting at 7:30 in London, ending in Indonesia. Always the same time, with one exception in India, where we come on at 1 in the afternoon on Sunday. This is a far cry from going on 29 years ago when Satan thought this ministry was ceasing. And by faith we built the fountain of faith and said, till Jesus comes again, we'll be washing this old world with the word of the gospel. We're doing it, folks. And that's why we exist, and that's why you're here. And I want to hear from the folks on 56 if you appreciate this time. And I want all of you that are coming to the cathedral to make your reservations. I'm about 200 short of what we normally have at this time. So get on the telephone. Start the new year right. It's First Fruits Month. I want to hear your commitments. Come on, get on the telephone. Anaheim calling. calling in my reservation for next Sunday. I want to thank Pastor for the message. I trust in the blood. Satan can eat bleep, only he says it if Pastor wanted to say. Well, then this person got the message. Hearst, Texas. Dr. Scott, thank you for being on Channel 27 in Dallas. A few weeks back, my grandson was flipping through the channels and stopped on Dr. Scott and started to watch. My grandson's been hanging around with the wrong crowd. He's only 14 and has been on drugs for some time now. Now that he's been watching you, his life has changed. He told me that if Dr. Scott says drugs are bad, that I quit. Well, dope is for dopes. You don't even need to be religious to know that. You just have to have some brains. Only dopes take dope. You're so much not a man or a woman, you can't get a thrill without it. Go bury yourself. That's better than living death. Dopes for dopes. I don't even let a dentist give me Novocaine if I can take it. I want to see everything coming to me. I want no clouds in front of my eyes. Probably my dead body will react even formaldehyde. But I'll be gone. Nothing I can do about it until I come back by God's power to get that body. I'm so thankful for you, Dr. Scott. Thank you. Copenhagen, Denmark, this morning. Thank you, Dr. Scott, for today's lecture. I hold a PhD degree, but you keep me on my toes all the time. I claim that my accumulated Kabbalah will hit the devil's fan with full power. And thank you, Pastor, for the new hall of the papyri displays. It is stunning. I'll be back there many times. There's too much to absorb in just one visit. That's true. I'd like to hear from you that have visited the papyri display and the new Ethiopian display up on the balcony floor. Come on, get on the telephone. I'm here to teach. And Sunday night is the time, all the rest of the week, is straight teaching. Sunday night's the time when we're live that I address my congregation, which is all around the world, and particularly here in Los Angeles. Now, I can go home. I don't want to, but I am an icon in a sense. I've been on live TV more than anybody in this town for the last 29 years. And you know, I'm capable of getting up and leaving an empty seat here. I'm talking to my congregation. Get on the telephone. You've got to make your reservations. We've got to have them by Wednesday noon. We've got to mail the passes to you. Now wake up in the new year and get started right. Get on the telephone. And make your first fruits commitment, you congregational people that know what you're doing. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you shouldn't participate. I'm talking to my people. Now, why do I need a path to come to the cathedral? Because I'm the teacher, I'm in charge, and I don't want anybody there that doesn't understand that it's a college level teaching on the Bible, and I don't want you there unless you come to learn. It's that simple. And the way you let me know that you mean business and you're not just a church tramp shopping around, if you make a reservation, we mail you a pass. Nobody trying to convert you, change you, or do anything. That's God's business. I just teach. Of course, a trip to the cathedral is a rare privilege for anybody. The Bibles on display there represent the greatest collection in private hands around the world. Nothing to match it. Only copies, many only copies existing in the world. It shows the history of the Bible. In 52 weeks, you go to all the stations of the book, you'll understand how we got our Bible. But I want to know you're there because you seriously want to learn. You make your reservations. The kids from 2 to 12, we take them in air-conditioned buses with adult supervision to one of the many museums in the area. about 40 of them. And they come back at 1 o'clock. There's nursery care up to 2. It's not discussable. If you have a 4 or 5 year old child who's never been away from you, then one of the parents go with them on the bus. I want adults in the service. You can't get into the service until you're 12. And I want adults in the service that are there to learn. I did a PhD at Stanford in philosophies of education. If I did what I trained to do, I'd be teaching in a university classroom. I just turned the camera into that, in the cathedral, into the live class. And the message is going out to the world, and you're part of the live inspiration. So it's a privilege to be there. And if you don't know that, you shouldn't be there. And if you do, you don't mind making a reservation. So get on the telephone. All right. We got our band here tonight. Take your places, guys. This is like the old days when we used to have a live band here for every festival. Some of the most famous voices in music used to come by here. I remember, I was sad to see Johnny Cash. Step aboard the boat for eternity. I remember when Johnny called and was going to Bahamas for a vacation. And he asked us to send him the whole year of the previous Sunday messages. He was going to study them. That's when I was teaching on the book of Revelation and Daniel. And he wanted the whole year. As he was going down to the Bahamas, and he was just going to, I guess, sit on the beach and listen to the messages. You never know where this message goes. Jimmy Buffett, his book, Margaritaville, or whatever it was. Remember that? About midway through the book, I was reading it, sort of enjoying his book. And he comes in from some bar late at night down there in one of the Mediterranean, or rather the Caribbean islands. So as I sit down and prop my feet up and turn on the TV to watch old Dr. Gene smoke his cigar. You never know where this message is going. Remember when Loretta Lynn used to go by with her bus and stop, and her crew would answer phones here as long as we didn't make a big deal out of it? Got a call from Merle the other day. Why don't you get one of Merle's numbers ready? I think it was last Sunday he got a call from Merle. His wife's not feeling well. Merle Haggard, you need to pray for her. But we used to have good times here with the band. You ready?
Yes, sir.
Get all excited. Now, I'm preaching through, teaching through, and preaching through Romans. Verse by verse. Approaching 230 messages, if I haven't gotten there already. They're available on CD-ROM and on cassette tapes if you want to catch the earlier ones, but I'm in the section from the 21st to the 27th verse of the third chapter. I think you're beginning to understand. And we will replay this morning's service in about an hour as it went out from the cathedral this morning. But I think you're beginning to understand why that Luther said, and most great Bible scholars that have handled the area will say, if you understand these verses, you will understand all of Romans and you will understand the whole Bible. And it should be apparent to before I'm done with the 25th verse, I'll be from Genesis to Revelation. You know, you read and it sounds poetic. What's it mean when it says of a certain band in heaven in the book of Revelation, these are those that have washed their robes white in the blood of the Lamb? Oh, it's so easy to just have these spiritual words hung on our brain and never stopped to think about them, what they mean. I didn't have time today, but I will probably next Sunday, to show you how some scholars that don't confess the fact that they neither believe in the resurrection, and they don't believe heaven is somewhere. They're so into philosophy rather than God's Word, and I think I'm qualified to speak with a PhD in philosophy of education from Stanford, so affected by the Hellenistic philosophers that corrupted Christianity by the 3rd and 4th centuries, don't believe in resurrection. They don't believe in demons. They don't believe heaven's a place. It's a state. And I'm not talking about a state like California, a state of being. God's everywhere, so it can't be somewhere. Well, he's everywhere and somewhere. He manifests himself. And how faith in the blood, which I haven't really come down on yet, forces you to the point of saying, I am crucified with Christ. Most of you, even in my congregation, are not there yet. You don't really think that God can't stand aside of you without that which corrupts and stains be removed. And there's no removal unless you're in that death. I, that we keep justifying and keeping alive and painting over that skabala, am crucified with Christ. Yet, not I. Or rather, I am crucified with Christ, yet I live. Yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. And that same blood, as Watchman Nee says, Christianity is God in Christ through the Spirit, passing in and through us. Your life's not your own. You're bought with a price. In that he died for all, that they which live should not henceforth live unto themselves. You died with Christ. You're no longer your own. Should not henceforth live unto themselves, but unto him that died for them and rose again. And I submit that a lot of you in my congregation have stabilized at a certain comfort zone. You haven't progressed in dying in years. We had a guy working for us not long ago that lied to me. And I chased him off the property. He's lucky I did that. He lied to my wife in a responsible place, given a chance. recently, as the messages I preached, get me under conviction. I give people chances that don't deserve it. I'm not God. I can't see the heart. When people get up, point in the right direction, I give them another chance. And my wife has absorbed that pastor's heart. I said to someone as recent as 2 nights ago, you don't care what happens to these people eternally. I'm the one that will stand at the judgment seat of Christ and answer for my charge of those that God has put in the position of following me as I follow Christ. I care what happens to them eternally. Compassion grows. My wife has been touched with it, so she called this person. Give him another chance. He had written so-called apologies, the sorry sir routine. She didn't call him. She had one of the other people call him. You're forgiven, which is what he'd been asking for. Now, the calling and election of God is without recall. Elisha could probably wish that Elijah had never come out of the woods. He probably was planning a pretty good farmer's life. He's plowing after those oxen. This, the most complicated problem he had was watching his step as he avoided the droppings of the cows that were pulling, or whatever it was, pulling his plow. And his Elijah comes out of the woods, lays his mantle on him. Now he can keep plowing or do what he did, burn the yoke and slaughter the oxen. You know, for 11 years he just picked up after Elijah. He was just a servant for 11 years. I can tell you this, he didn't have any choice or right to go back to that plow. You can whine and complain all you want. God, through Elijah, picked him. That separated him from the crowd. What an opportunity. Who, by the way, would later receive a double portion and count the miracles, did more miracles, and most of them involving resurrection life than Elijah did. As you read in 1 and 2 Kings. This guy, mercy. He begins to whine, well, it's those 12 hours a day that get to me. Now, you know, I keep looking for ways to talk on television. What's an endearment word you use with a cat? No. It starts with a P. And that's what this guy is. He shouldn't be wearing pants. Now, maybe you're going to be a Christian, be one. I'm so tired of these Christians that don't even know what their sex is, and men that can't be men. Oh, 12 hours. It's that 12 hours. You sorry sack of Skabala. Don't get sympathy from me. It's like the guy who apologized and wrote me a letter and read it to you, counted 42 or 43 I's and knees in it. Where are you getting your idea of Christianity? That God's a bellhop and a waiter, a nurse, and a funder of your self-centered ways. I wonder what 12 hours would mean to Paul. Let no man think me a fool, he says in 2 Corinthians 11. I think it's about time since I'm interpreting Paul's letter to the Romans to just pause and take another look at the man. If otherwise, yet as a fool, receive me, that I may boast myself a little, since everybody else making themselves a fool. That which I speak it not after the Lord, but as it were foolishly. Seeing that many glory after the flesh, I'm gonna just make a fool of myself and glory too. Since you're showing off your wondrous worth to God, let me boast a while. Seeing that many glory after the flesh, I'll glory also. For ye suffer fools gladly. You seem to follow them around, all these boasters for Jesus. Seeing ye yourselves are wise and can make these decisions. For ye suffer if a man bring you into bondage, if a man devour you, if a man take of you, if a man exalt himself, if a man smite you on the face. I speak as concerning reproach, as though we had been weak. Howbeit, whereinsoever any is bold, I speak foolishly, I'm bold also. So just get ready here. I'm firing it at you. This is a little bit of my autobiography, Paul speaking, since the Lord... Hey, I was heading down the Damascus Road. I didn't even like this guy, Christ. He interfered with my life. And he knew I'm so stubborn, he blinded me. I had to be led to a guy I never heard of. And if I had heard of him, I'd wanted to kill him because he's a Christian. He tells me my history, and I'm dependent on him. He heals me. I get driven off into the desert for 3.5 years to be taught by the resurrected Christ to get a little sense of my self-righteous, egotistical, pharisaical ways. Since then, are they Hebrews, these that are boasting? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. I could say they're Pentecostals. So am I. I reshape the Assemblies of God. Research director of their council on their committee on advance. The Wednesday night speaker at their council on evangelism. Redefining their whole statement of purpose. Director of the committee putting her college back on the track. 80-some schools overseas to chart the transition from missionaries to nationals. Blue Ribbon Committee with Linwood Maddox, legal affairs secretary for Governor Reagan in those days, recharting the Northern California Nevada district. ...17 years executive in the Full Gospel Fellowship, of which the executives were out here recently. Vice president, first vice president, 3 terms as president. Some of you critics out there, you need to stop being such fools. God's caused me to walk alone. Hasn't made me walk naked around Los Angeles yet, like he did Isaiah around Jerusalem, which you'll hear about in the message at 9 o'clock. Are they the seed of Abraham? So am I, Paul said. So am I through the blood of Christ and the seed of the Spirit, I would say. Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors more abundant, as long as it's under 12 hours a day. Don't make me sick, some of you comfort zone Christians. When I came here 29 years ago, my first message to the teachers at a banquet is, if you ever do anything for God, it's going to cost you something. Some of you are too comfortable. I look around and see some of you who owe your life to the Word of God that God has put through me, and you moved into a comfort zone, and you haven't volunteered for something in addition in years. You've got your little 2, 4, and 6. You remind me of the guy that came to my dad's church in Orville. He would pay tithe if it killed him. But you couldn't put a shotgun up his vital organs and get 1 cent more than the tithe. I got a message tonight from a couple in Reno. Begging with much begging. The words of the Macedonian Christians to participate. As they talk about their first fruits offerings. I don't like what I see in my congregation. I'm talking to my congregation. I don't like the fact that some of you sit in a prominent place, featured on television. You haven't added one sacrificial thing other than your giving and your little, whatever it is, commitment. I can send out a plea for a desperate need at a certain time. You ain't there. Don't talk to me about sacrifice. You haven't yet resisted unto blood. There's no nails in your wrist. You haven't died with Christ yet. I'm the one who teaches that the tithe is a limit on your giving. I don't want some gospel commune where you give everything away and 100% of your time has gone to God. I have pastors, reserve guard people out there. You lied to me. When I send out the call for volunteers, that means you send your name in the hat. Try to tell the National Guard when they call up you're not ready. I set a Philippian band loose a few years ago. You aren't even close. You got a number and you lied to God and me. Now, I deal straight and honest with people. I can be nice and I can be blunt. I don't like hypocrites. I don't like cowards. And I don't like that man that's wants to be stroked like a cat. But I went through that pretty slick. Listen to Paul, the one that's telling us in these verses that I'm going to preach about come about 35, 40 minutes from now. Are they ministers of Christ? I'm more, and labor's more abundant. I speak as a fool, he says. Stripes above measure. In prisons more frequent. 12 hours. I don't even want that guy in my church. I don't want him even contaminating. I'm like Patton. I wish Patton had knocked the head off of that guy in there that says it's the nerves, General. Get this coward out of my... He had just prayed over another soldier that died. I have to watch the Patton movie periodically to get mad at bureaucrats. That do-nothing senator that wasn't even in the same county where a shot was fired. Making Patton apologize, we wouldn't be the United States today without Patton. You should knock that coward clear through the side of the wall. I love it when he comes to the cook and the cook says, well, he says, where's your leg? I'm a cook, sir. You're a soldier, too. I loved it when he stumbled over that soldier asleep and says, where are you going? Sleeping, sir. Well, carry on. You're only a son of a you-know-what. He didn't mince words. He wasn't on TV. He didn't know they'd make a movie about it. You're the only son of a you-know-what in this army that knows what he's doing. Sleeping, sir. Where's your helmet, doctor? Well, sir, I can't wear my stethoscope and my ears with a helmet. Well, drill a hole in it. As he goes out the door, I mean, George Scott played him better than Patton played. get a helmet. Very little of Christianity believes it's in a warfare with the devil. You ain't taking no ground. Don't give me your hardship for Jesus. And labor's more abundant, and stripes above measure, and prisons more frequent, and deaths often. Of the Jews, 5 times received I 40 stripes save one. They counted them. 39. They went one over or one under. The guy doing the beating got the same dose. You have no idea what 39 stripes with that whip did to a man simply because he was a Christian. Thrice was I beaten with rods. Once was I stoned. Thrice I suffered shipwreck. A night and a day I've been in the deep. I want to be able to say when I get over there what Paul said on his way out. I kept the faith. I finished my course. I want to be able to stand beside him when the rewards are handed out as we faithfully take his message as he penned it to the world. That's what we're about, folks. Go find another church with a pastor that'll stroke you and cater to you and reduce the kingdom down to your wants. Just believe in Jesus and have a religious party, feel good religion. It ain't very feel good. Thrice I was beaten with rods, once I was stoned, thrice I suffered shipwreck. A night and a day I've been in the deep, in journeyings often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils by my own countrymen, in perils by the heathen, in perils in the city. I wonder if 12 hours is worse than perils. In perils in the wilderness. In perils in the sea. In perils among false brethren. Not 12 hours to do this. In weariness. In painfulness. In watchings often. In hunger and thirst. In fastings often. In cold and nakedness. Besides those things that are without, boy, do I know this. That which cometh upon me daily, the care of all the churches. Who is weak? And I'm not weak. Who's offended? And I burn not. If I must needs glory, I will glory of the things which concern mine infirmities. The God and the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, which is blessed forevermore, knoweth that I lie not. In Damascus, the governor under Aretas, the king, he must have stirred up Arabia for 3.5 years because the Nabataean kingdom that ruled all of South Arabia, Aretas, the king, in the city of Damascus, with a garrison, desirous to apprehend me. He must have really stirred him up in that 3.5 years. And through a window in a basket, I was let down by the wall and escaped his hands. I coined the phrase rope fellows when I was here about a couple of years. Out of that came the company of the committed. And then the Philippian band. You don't even know their names. They risked their life. Taking what they had, hands, muscles, rope, and basket. But if they hadn't done it, there'd have been no first, second, third missionary journey. There wouldn't have been a Book of Romans or a Corinthian letter. Don't be weary in well-doing, you of my congregation that have settled on your lease. You'll reap in due time, due season, if you faint not. Nobody's asking you to give up everything. Just shake yourself loose and be a little more available. What a crime that this message around the world 24 hours a day. I will come in here when I'm not live and find one voice of faith trying to man this whole set of phones. What a crime that we have to struggle to find people that will dedicate themselves and stick to a commitment to fill a block of time. Of security down at the cathedral. Oh, somebody else would do that. Well, I'm sure somebody else could have had the 40 stripes too. I'm frankly kind of sick of some of you overfat, teenage and mature people that I've watched get fat and bald, to think you've somehow graduated from that enthusiasm you had when you were first rescued with the light of the gospel. Oh, you've got a family now. Well, why should God bless you as we go into this first fruits time? The first fruits belong, like the tithe, to the Lord. And an angel goes before you whether you like it or not. Just depends on whether he's going to be PO'd at you or protecting you. I would have shown you, probably will next Sunday, brilliant British scholar. I admire him beyond measure for his scholarship. He doesn't believe in miracles, doesn't believe in resurrection, like Lex Miller, the New Zealand theologian that was my major religious man on my dissertation for Reinhold Niebuhr. Didn't believe in resurrection because he's afraid he couldn't prove it. Now, Paul didn't worry about that. He said, if there's no resurrection, we're liars and false witnesses of God. If there's no resurrection, I don't need Christianity, don't need anything. If there is resurrection, I can believe the rest of it. He didn't believe in demons. Doesn't believe in heaven being a place, doesn't believe that Jesus had to not only die in the equivalent of the outer court, but take the equivalent of his blood in his resurrected self to the throne of God and then distribute the same power in his blood to empower the life flow in us. Some of you are just stale Christians with no life, showing up to be fed, overstuffed, and then somebody else will do it when the pastor calls for help. And some of you, through Secret 16, are like these rope fellows. God bless you and honor you and increase your strength. But it's just so remarkable that it's the same volunteers that show up every time. All the rest of you fat cats for Jesus, sit out there and drink it in. And I want to vomit when I get some of your messages. How wonderful the message is. Well, do-de-do-de-do-do. What are you doing with it? What change has occurred in you the last year that makes you more able this year to say, I am crucified with Christ. Yet I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. If he lives in you, you're going to have the faith of him. You make a commitment, you're going to keep it. You're going to be like the founder of World Missions. His shoe business was not his business. He did that like Paul made tents. Getting the gospel out was his business. These rope fellows couldn't do what Paul did, but they did what they could do. And we got a shortage of rope fellows in this church. And you better get your act together. You better start right now. You know, you're making me mad. Don't do that. You that are in my congregation, get on the telephone. I want these phones busy tonight with your commitments. You know what they are. I don't have to tell you what to do. Get on the telephone. That I am telling you to do. I went recently down to Cathedral with Mayor James Hahn, and those pictures were taken as I took him on a tour of the 50-some stations of the book. As always, one of the best-kept secrets in town, he was amazed when he left. He said, "Thank you, Gene, for something I rarely get in this office, time of spiritual refreshing." If most of Los Angeles, that portion of it that represents intelligent people, knew what was at the cathedral, they'd be lining up to get in there at least once just to see the Bible collection. And I'll guarantee you that you can come for the next 25 weeks and only visit the Hall of the Papyri that we've just opened, and you won't be finished. I'm laying that just the beginning. We have lots of space in the tower, and part of Secret 16 included what I've already said about what we've done there. But you're just seeing the surface of the Hall of the Papyri. And I hope you're getting the message before I have to preach this coming Easter that I'm arming the gun against the Jesus Seminar that tries to tell us we don't have any eyewitnesses writing on these events until the second or third century, and they're not eyewitnesses. Indeed, what they're really saying is they're liars, saying they're somebody they're not. Well, that's my whole message. They're either liars or what they told was true. You can make the choice based on the evidence I give you. But if you go in the Hall of the Papyri, there's first century stuff there. And when I get to the fifth chapter of Romans, I'll be using the Chester Beatty Papyri that's on display down there, second century, less than my years, less than my years from the time Paul wrote that book of Romans. He wrote it in 58 A.D. The Chester Beatty manuscript that I'll be using from the fifth chapter on, second century, early 100s. Second century is not 200 A.D. The first century ends at 99 A.D. Second century starts at 100. Paul wrote Romans in 58 A.D. Don't tell me we can't go back and find the consistency of the testimony and with the manuscripts able to do what we were able to point out about 1 John 5 today. Isolate and detect where someone added something or took away. Make your reservations at the cathedral. You know, I want to hear that song, Peace in the Valley, again. I like the way she sang it last Sunday night at the Shalom service. You got that one? Let it go. Do I have to wait 5 seconds? So, I've faded that song away because I want to say something before we go into the service. You understand why it was so hard on you that are not stepping up to the plate to help us? My wife just came out here to tell me now, when it is an absolute rule that we're not to be surprised with, that anybody makes mistakes. But just now, before I am bringing the morning service up, I'm finding out, and we were told after we got here, that they bleeped up the opening of the service. We have plenty of opportunities since 2 o'clock this afternoon to get this ready to play tonight, which everybody knew we'd play. These are the problems, not that people make mistakes, but that they try to cover their mistakes and avoid reporting where we can do something about it. I said, no, we're not going to do some cut and paste that they just tried to do right now. We're going to play it just the way it happened. And I'm telling you, you can watch the mess up on the opening of the service that is designed to go around the world for CD-ROMs, and we weren't even told until we got here. And I'm not going to cover for them. I'm going to play it the way it is, and then I'm going to go back and behead some of them. So just watch this.